This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 113. The Avengers is not a failure. Hello again, everyone. You found it. We are back. This is The Geek Dads, episode number 113. I am Ken Denmead, editor and publisher of GeekDad.com, and we have a full house tonight, which is totally awesome. In no particular order, just the way they're showing up on my Skype screen right now. Hi, Dave. How's it going?
It's going very well, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing much better this week. Yes, I've caught up with most of life right now. Although it's going to get exciting again very soon. Very soon. But we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. Let's see. Who else? Corey.
Hello.
Have you ever been on a Geek Dads podcast?
I have not. And I am coming to you tonight from my beautiful closet, which is where my desk is.
I was going
to
say, are we in a walk-in closet?
We are.
I like it.
It has a window. So
it's efficient use of space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. There's that Matt guy. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Ken.
How are you doing this week?
Doing better than I have been. I'm a little less hectic this week. Yeah.
So well, you didn't have to jet set this week to movie premieres or anything, huh?
Or last week, to be fair. But
there you go.
But last week my in-laws were in town, so that was a little.
Oh, the busy, humanity.
Busier. I don't know. I get along with them, but it does make things busier. You know?
Yes, it does. And wake up, James.
I'm here. Sorry.
Okay.
Taking notes.
All right, good. Mr. James Floyd Kelly, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Ken. Thanks for inviting me tonight. Appreciate it.
The more the merrier, although we're probably straining Skype to its seams right now.
One more and we could lose it.
You never know what's going to happen. Although I do like, you know, they updated the interface a little bit and it's a little bit slicker. I don't know if the core is any better than it was. Probably not. It's a Microsoft product now, so it's all downhill.
I'm scared to click on anything and drag it around because I just don't want to lose my connection. So I'm just leaving it as it is.
You never know what'll happen.
Don't touch.
If it ain't broke, yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not always the case.
No, that's true.
So awesome. I'm trying to think, what's our big news right now, Matt?
What's our big news? There's the Avengers.
That little old thing.
Kind of a minor little movie coming out.
Now, how much did we talk about that last time?
Well, a little bit, because I was about to go see it.
And now you've seen it.
I have seen it.
And are you still under NDA? They'll take your firstborn and all that stuff if you talk about it?
Just not allowed to publish a review of it until April 30th.
Gotcha. Even though people all over the United Kingdom have already published reviews.
Yep. Because it opens a week early there. Yep.
Right. So everybody who wants to hear a review has already read it.
Yes. But
now, does putting it on a podcast count as publishing your review?
I think if I don't, you know, go into huge amounts of detail, which I wouldn't want to do anyway because they don't want to spoil anything.
Right. Right.
I can speak in broad strokes.
Okay. Let's grill them, guys. Come on.
It is every bit as good as you hope it will be and not nearly in any way a failure. Hello?
And not a failure. That is the best possible thing we could hope for.
Yeah, that's really.
That's a possible title. Not a failure.
Give the episode a little bit longer to go, and we'll see.
It is really just an excellent, excellent movie. I mean,
excellent comic book movie?
No, I think it's a good movie. I mean, it's not. You know, it's not going to.
The Academy is not going to be considering any awards, are they?
Not like not. Anything beyond like special effects, maybe. But
what do you mean? We need to start the Joss Whedon for Best Director campaign right now, before the movie comes out.
Think not this one anyway. No, I mean, just because I think it's a great job, but I think that it's not gonna, you know, that's not the sort of thing that usually wins Oscars. Although, if you know, if Return of the King can win Best Picture, then anything's possible, I suppose.
I don't accept that statement as that. If Return of the King can win because it was a great film.
Sure. But the point is, it's not the usual kind of film that wins Best Picture.
Okay. Right. I have to say, the way that came out was like, you know, if Return of the King can win it,
My point is that it's usually that kind of the geeky films, you know, films that inspire the geek crowd, do not win Best Picture.
That's true.
It doesn't matter how good they are. They just don't. Return of the King is a huge exception to that.
Corey brings up Avatar.
Well, didn't win, but it was nominated.
It was nominated. Oh, geeky films could get nominated.
Oh, okay. All right.
They just don't usually win.
Good. Okay.
And I could see the Avengers getting nominated because it is an awesome film. If they do 10 pictures again for Best Picture, I could see it getting nominated. I do not see it.
You know what? It'll win a Golden Globe, and that'll be okay.
It doesn't matter. It's gonna rake in the money. I don't care what kind of awards it wins. It's a great movie. It's one of the best, if not the best, superhero film I've seen, honestly. And that's not hyperbole. It really is exceedingly well done.
Okay. Do you include like Flash Gordon as a superhero movie?
Yes, I think I.
Well, then high praise indeed, sir. High praise indeed.
But I mean, I although it's a very different kind of film, I even
got the song in my head now.
Flash. He'll save every one of us.
The Christopher Nolan Batman films, too. I mean, although it's a radically different kind of film from those, obviously. The tone is completely, completely different. But I think it's better. It was just, you know, grinning from start to finish. It's just, it's got great characterization. It's got great action sequences. Yeah, the plot actually holds together.
How long did it run, Matt? Do you remember the time?
It was about 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Awesome. Good. Gotta love a good long movie.
Yeah, I mean, the first act went a little longer than I would have preferred it, but that's, you know, but only a little bit longer. Because, I mean, they had to establish, you know, okay, here's the characters, let's get them all together.
And there are a lot of characters in this movie.
Yes, and I think it was really genius on their part to get Whedon to do the film because he, of course, is very good at handling ensemble casts and making sure that no character gets short shrift.
Right.
And I mean, and even the lesser characters, you know, the non, you know, above the title stars get good stuff to do. I mean, Agent Coulson has a huge role in the movie. He's, you know, he has some great lines. He has some great scenes. And
you got to interview Clark Gregg.
I did. I talked to Clark Gregg. And he said that he actually learned that that he was going to be in the movie when at Comic-Con. I guess it would be, Comic-Con of 2010.
Yeah.
And when, you know, they were going to do the panel for, I guess it would be Iron Man 2, maybe, or Thor. I'm not sure which.
Probably Thor at that point, right?
Thor, it would have been Thor at that point. And you know, Joss Whedon was there, and he said, you know, hey, I really want Coulson to be in the movie. And he said, well, you know, well, sure.
You know, well, let me think about it.
Can I announce you as part of the cast? He was like, yeah, sure. he said, you know, he
what,
said,
you know what? You got to give it to Whedon for like, what a way to sucker a guy, you know, just to put a guy on a spot. Hey, you know, I'd like to announce the cast right now at the biggest geek event in the world of the year. So, you know, in or out. Okay.
And Greg said that he figured, you know, okay, the movie's got Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, the Hulk. What am I going to do, bring them coffee? You know? He said, but even if that's that, if it's just that, it'll be worth doing. So, and it's totally not just that.
Does Coulson get to be a badass?
He does.
Excellent.
And he gets to do some other cool stuff too, which I won't.
We get to see what's special about Coulson.
Yes.
That's what's important.
He has an unexpected side, yes.
Excellent. So, all right.
You know, on the Geek Mom list, the big question was, how much is Robert Downey Jr. in the movie? So,
quite a bit. I mean, he's got, of course, a lot of good lines because, you know, he's easy to give good lines.
He's the funny one. Yeah.
Well, actually, most people consider Iron Man to sort of be the leader of the Avengers versus Captain America. I've always thought Iron Man was the leader, therefore more screen time.
Well, they don't really have a leader per se. I mean, in this, because I mean, it takes them long enough to stop beating each other up.
Right.
Because the thing is, they all start out, you know, they're all prima donnas. They're all used to being the only one doing stuff, and they don't want to take orders from anybody. So it takes a while for them to come together, and, which they do, and it actually works the way they do it. Again, I don't want to say too much, but. Yeah, he certainly has some excellent lines. I mean, and of course, there's Nick Fury there, of course, too. So he's giving, you know, some instruction.
Got it. Does SHIELD have a large part to play in the movie?
Oh, yes.
Well, the whole thing takes place on the helicarrier, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Not the whole thing.
You see that in a couple of key scenes, but I've often wondered how much SHIELD is going to, you know, have its key players, heroes start banding together.
A very large amount. They still have a lot to do. A huge amount of it takes place on the helicarrier, which is much better done than I had anticipated. It's hard to make something like that believable, but they actually pull it off.
Very nice.
I personally am taking off May 4th. I will be at the theater at 9 o'clock because I think they have a 10 o'clock a.m. showing. I'm not going to have to pull the white bits for research. And
you won't be disappointed. It's I will say that as far as non-superhero related stuff goes, Tony Stark gets a little bit more to do than the others because of all the possible love interests there, Pepper Potts is the only one who actually does appear in the film.
Yay, Pepper.
No Sharon Carter?
I'm sorry.
No Sharon Carter? No. Agent 13, Sharon Carter?
No.
Captain America? Come on, guys. Aren't you Marvel geeks?
she'd be 80 years old.
Well, no, that was Peggy back when we were...
That was Peggy.
You're right.
But
she doesn't.
Natalie Portman does appear as a photograph. I wonder how much she was paid for that, but no,
she
literally
was filming Black Swan at the time or whatever, so she couldn't.
Literally, just a photograph of Natalie Portman appears, and she's
above the full credits, probably. No.
Wonder how much money she got paid for that one photo in the movie.
Yeah, I was just saying. I wonder too. And I will say that you know, a lot of people had their doubts about. How Ruffalo was going to do as the Hulk, but as Bruce Banner, really, but he really does a fantastic job, far better than I had anticipated. They really did a good job of making him seem like, you know, a nerdy scientist who doesn't like being the center of attention, but because of what happens to him, is kind of forced to be in the center of attention. So,
excellent.
It works out quite well.
Okay, we're all excited now.
Yeah.
I don't know why it just occurred to me, but at the premiere, there were actually people walking out before the end credits were over.
Newbies.
Idiots.
People not know.
Have the other movies not taught you anything?
Yes.
They walked out on those. They have never seen any post-credit sequences, obviously.
Although, yeah, you know, there was no post-credit scene for Joss's Cabin in the Woods. I was really disappointed. Now, I realize it's a Marvel thing. I realize it's a Marvel movie thing, but I thought for sure Joss would take him. You know,
well, Joss did not direct Cabin in the Woods.
He didn't direct, you know. He
That's true. That's true. He did not direct.
Right.
Wasn't his call.
Yeah, exactly. So
Goddard should have done it. Come on.
Is this not the year of Joss?
Oh, it truly is, yeah.
Because aren't we also, we're waiting for the Shakespeare to come out, too.
Yeah, they haven't announced that yet, so I'm assuming it's probably not going to be this year if they haven't announced yet. But who knows?
It was filmed at his house, they said?
Unless it's going to be online again.
Yeah, I heard it was filmed in and around his house, yeah. But he's going to have offers coming in right and left after Avengers hits, because it's going to just rake in the money hand over fist.
All right, then here's the challenge to this greatly esteemed geeky group. If we could have Joss Whedon take one beloved property and make it over in his image, what would it be?
Mm. Oh, I'd want to see him do Birds of Prey.
Excellent.
Birds of Prey.
Ooh, okay, very strong. Yeah.
The original team, Black Canary, Huntress, Oracle.
Well, what was kind of fun is actually at the press conference, which I'm going to post the video for it tomorrow. But somebody asked him, so what advice would you have, for DC making a movie of, you know, Justice League? And he said, call me.
Now, Ken, does it have to be a comic book series? Or
no.
Be...
Ken, I'm throwing it out there wide open.
I've been waiting forever for a William Gibson Neuromancer to be done properly, and I would love to see Joss do that. A Neuromancer movie. It could be done.
I would like to see what he would have done with Star Trek differently from what Abrams did. That would have been cool.
I don't know. Joss doing the Star Trek, the dialogue is what always gets me with Joss. You know, his character dialogue. I don't know. Star Trek would be slightly different, I guess.
I just think, I don't dislike what Abrams has done with it, I think... There are some significant issues with it that I think that wouldn't be there if Whedon were in charge of it. But, you know, we'll never know.
I apologize. The cat on the TV.
Cora, I'm just waiting for you to go, $1 billion. You got just the right angle on the camera, too. It's like...
Oh, am I frozen?
No, Mr. Denmead, I expect you to die.
Yes. Oh.
Oh, it's been said before.
Once or twice.
Okay, so the excitement is building for Avengers. Let's see, what else have we got going? Hey, we hit 1,500 members to the community today.
Okay. All right. A lot of fun stuff going on over there.
Yes, Mr. Dave, one of the community leaders at the Geek Dad community, geekdad.hotwired.com. What are you guys doing over there?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things for people to do. There are blog posts. There's people are posting videos and photos all the time. But I think probably the most exciting thing going on right now is Michael Harrison's running a mafia game based on Game of Thrones. And it just started this week, and it is a lot of fun.
Explain to us what that all means for our listening audience.
Sure. So Mafia is it's an old party game, and basically
played by Italian ruffians. No? Oh.
Dinner guests most of the time. I don't know. I guess it's kind of those things that you can play. Anybody can play, but basically it comes down to. People are separated into two groups, town people and mafia people, who are criminals trying to do bad, but nobody knows the identity of the other group. And so in this case, Michael's split people into, excuse me, Lannisters and Starks. It's just started. So basically you're given a week to try and identify through, in this case, chat board discussion, who is a bad guy or a Lannister, and vote to have that person hung or killed. And the goal is to eliminate the bad guys, and it's balanced. So there are more good guys than bad guys. But if you can get rid of all the bad guys first, the good guys win. If not, things aren't so rosy.
Excellent.
But it's a fun little it's a fun little game, and I think it was pretty ingenious for Michael to bring that into the community over there, and it's a lot of fun to watch those guys playing because they're really having a good time.
Fantastic. So we can totally expect more of that coming down the pike.
Absolutely. That, and we're, you know, I think we're all trying to think of other fun things to do that are kind of in line with that.
Excellent, excellent. And we're talking about, there is a chat feature that we could enable, and I kind of like the idea, make things a little more real-time and conversational there. So you might see that pop up soon, too. So everybody's encouraged to stop by geekdad.hotwired.com and join the community, because we're also sort of using that as our farm team for GeekDad. And if you start, you know, posting blog posts there and you're putting up good stuff, you could get called up to, you know, the majors or something. Or
projects as well, Ken.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a lot of really good things that people are doing, great ideas for weekend projects and are bigger than weekend projects. So
excellent. I shouldn't be using sports analogies on a geek podcast. I'm sorry. I have to apologize. So I did something really cool this last weekend.
I've been waiting to hear this.
The Vex Robotics World Championship. I went to visit good old Geek Dad Anton, who was one of the field engineers down there for this thing. So imagine, if you will, a very large convention center space. Every single booth in this convention center space is actually the pit for a robot team. Robot teams from around the world, for middle schoolers, for junior high schoolers, and college teams. And these are the cream of the crop, the top about 15% of thousands of teams that have sort of met and competed all over the place. These 600 teams come together once a year in, you know, wherever it's held. It was in Anaheim this year, and bring their robots that have been designed, built, and tested to run specific tasks in an arena. And they do these awesome competitions. They do a bunch of round-robin one-on-one battles. You know, teams that have probably two or three robots, I think they can run two robots at a time in an arena against another team. They can do, you know, both offensive to score points or even defensive robots. It's all about, this year it was all about scooping up about 7-inch large rubber spheres, and then these cone things where the ends are scooped out. So if you could stack cones on spheres on cones to build columns, and they have to be able to pick them up and then drop them into these. If you think about when you like a big vertical thing for holding basketballs or something, you got to put them in these big chutes, and it's this. Yeah, these one-on-one battles, and everybody's rushing to do stuff. And there's some picky rules. Like in the first 20 seconds, the robots have to act completely autonomously, so they have to be pre-programmed to do something. And then for a minute and a half, they're run under joystick control. And then they have to meet certain size constraints, but beyond that, you know, they're just using the normal Vex kit. And like in the last 30 seconds of the match, they can also introduce a doubler block and a negator block. If you get the doubler on your column, it doubles the points that you get from that column, and you can put the negator on your opposing team's column to negate all the points from their column. And it becomes these awesome challenges. And this is like, you know, a super rock and roll concert of robot geeks. And it's just a bunch of fun. It was really neat to watch. I got to shake the hand of a Nobel Prize-winning physicist who was the guest of honor, Professor Douglas Osheroff, who won the Nobel Prize back in the 80s for super, super cool states of matter research in helium that was just, you know, but really nice guy.
It sounds like a name that belongs in a comic book.
It does. You know, he was awfully blue. And
with a dot on it, with a circle on his head.
Yeah, he had just, at one point he went like this. Yeah. But he had a suit on, so I couldn't tell. Yeah.
But he was 10 feet tall.
Right. Well, depended upon what his mood.
And there were five of them.
Right. Once again, depends upon the time and the mood. And, so it was terrible. It was overwhelmingly inspiring. It was really one of the cool things that they did this year in the structure of the competition was, all through all the sort of day-to-day challenges, it was all one team against another team. You paired your two robots against their two robots. Once, everybody had been through like four or six or eight challenges and you got standings, they took the top, I think, eight from each of four divisions to go into their own championships. And at that point, what the teams had to do was they would create an alliance. Each team that was in their top eight for their division could then go out to another team that had not made it into the top eight and say, we want to ally with you so that we can use one of your robots through the championships, through the playoffs and through the championships. So what you then did was all these teams have been competing up to a certain point. Now teams were forming these alliances, helping offset strengths, weaknesses with strengths, and you got these super teams, with one, a couple of really good offensive bots and one really good defensive bot, and it was so cool to see. And so we happened to follow this one team from the playoffs up to the championship that was three teams, one from Canada. I think one from the U.S. and one from New Zealand, who had partnered up, and the Canadian team had the most unique bot of any of the teams that had come in. They had come up with a defensive bot that, beyond what it would do, and it's almost, it had two purposes. At the very outset, when it was in autonomous mode, they had actually installed a pneumatic system on it that would pump up with a bike pump before every match. And the second that the match started and it went into autonomous period, it would shoot out two arms and basically cut the playing field in half so that no bot from one team could get to the other side. And then the second one is it had this long arm with a cap on it that it would flop out and put on top of the center scoring chamber, so that the opposing team could not put points in the scoring chamber. And then once he got to the remote control phase, whenever his offensive bot was ready, they would lift the cap off, score points, and put the cap back on. And as things went through, a couple of the teams were able to work out ways to pry the top off and get some stuff in. But it basically worked all the way through. And these guys went to the championships and they won it.
Wow.
And it was real. Nice. That was so much fun to see. So, and this is
it's good time to be a kid these days, isn't it?
It really is. I'm like, especially I actually, the frightening thing, I found my high school there. I actually found the high school that I went to. They have a small team now, and they were competing. They did, and I was like, "Oh man, we didn't have this when I was at high school. This is not fair." It was really cool. I'm actually here's the scary thing. Weekend after next, I actually go to my 25th high school reunion, and I'm gonna complain to somebody. Why weren't you doing this? Just because the whole thing didn't exist back then. Why weren't you doing it? It was.
I tell you, between Vex and First, and there's another one called Best, BEST, those three robotics competitions, it's a really good time to just be a young kid coming out, because if you enjoy that kind of stuff, most schools seem to be getting teams together. They start with a Lego, at the young age for the First, but then once you get in middle and high school, where you can branch out to Best, First, or Vex.
Yeah,
you'll get into much more complicated robots. So.
Yeah, and either one does pretty well. They all do. In fact, there were guys I was meeting that were part of the people running the competition. So they're more affiliated with Vex, but they run teams in both Vex and First.
Yeah.
So in the First World Championship is this coming weekend.
Right.
It starts I think Thursday in St. Louis, and I'm actually I'm driving over on on Thursday. I'll be there Friday. And the competitions, it sounds almost identical to what you went through, Ken. The same, it seems like the same sort of expectations of kids and the same sort of type of competition.
Yeah.
I'm sure the contest itself, I'm sure it's different. I'm not sure what it is this year, but
I'm jealous. Otherwise. It was here in Atlanta for like 6 or 7 years before it moved to St. Louis. So I got to go about 5 years in a row, and I always enjoyed it.
It's really neat. And I mean, the enthusiasm of many of the teams, especially some of the international teams, the Puerto Rican team, their fan base was huge and vocal, and the Saudis, just all the families are coming, everybody's rooting them on. It was so much fun to see. So
well, and I think the thing that's really cool is that when I went last year as well, and they had different vendors with booths there, and I thought it was so fantastic. You had schools like Harvard and Stanford and different governmental departments there recruiting these kids to come work for them after they get done with their education, because there are some really bright minds there, and it's great to have this sort of opportunity for kids.
Yeah.
There were a lot of software companies there too, giving away like very expensive software. I mean, just giving it away to the kids. Here, use it, learn it, and we'll see you in four years, 10 years, and we may hire you.
I can't resist asking what the proportion of girls to boys is
were all girl teams.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'd probably go about 70-30 boys girls, mm-hmm. but very strong girl representation. A lot of the many of the teams had girls doing the driving in a lot of the challenges. So it's completely out there and available to everybody.
And it's changing, Corey. I mean, every year, I think the last time I spoke to FIRST and LEGO, they were telling me that every year the number of girls involved increases. And, eventually probably it may even hit, 70-30 the opposite way. I mean, that's a possibility.
I asked because I know one of our Geek Mom bloggers, she has a career in science. And, of course, she's, very much into getting the girls to not consider that they shouldn't be in science or it's a guy thing. So, yeah. But it's changing. You talked about high school not having anything like this when you were in high school. We didn't even have sports teams for girls when I was in high school. Mm. So it's really nice to see the change.
It is very cool. And it was just a fantastic experience. So totally encourage anyone who's got kids that might remotely be interested in this kind of thing, go check at your school and see if there are any teams that are already established. Go, or there may be just local area teams. They have this tendency of people establishing these teams, actually starting nonprofit corporations to represent the teams, to accept donations and help fund the kids doing these things. So they become semi-independent of the schools, because the schools, funding and interest from schools can be a very fickle thing. And so in many cases, you'll get parents parents whose kids may have moved on, but are just very enthusiastic about what the experience of being involved in this does for kids, will start these nonprofit organizations and keep it going in their community, reaching out to different schools just to help keep moving the kids through the program and getting them there. Because, you can start in seventh grade, you can probably start earlier, but start competing seriously in seventh grade and have it carry you all the way through high school and then on to college. And there are college teams. And once you're doing that, you're getting noticed by companies, by really good technical companies. Yeah. That could be it's an excellent route to a very good career.
And taking that just one step further, Ken, if you're somebody who has a hobby of robotics or engineering or something like that, they're always looking for mentors.
Yeah.
These schools and the groups.
Big time. Very, very awesome. All right, any other geeky news or stuff that we want to start promoting for the week? And I think I saw someone sneaking up behind Corey for a second there, but now the door is closed. You know, if somebody sneaks up and tries to kill Corey right now, you know, hopefully there's not too much lag on Skype. Actually, Corey, look out!
Oh, I had to rescue my iced tea from the cat. He wanted the straw, and so finally I just had to give him the straw to save my iced tea. And so he's busy behind me eating it, the straw. So.
Hey, Kim, real quick, did you hear today's Apple profit report?
I might have read a little bit about those, you know, sadly lackluster earnings.
Yeah, I mean, they sold 11 million iPads, 35 million iPhones in the first quarter, you know.
I like the statement that that Cook made was, it took us, let's see, what was it? Oh, in the 2 years that iPads have been out, they've sold something on the line of 67 million iPads. It took them 24 years to sell that many Macs. It took them 5 years to sell that many iPods. It took them 3 years to sell that many iPhones.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and it tells you that where the future of computing is going. It really does.
It does.
At least in my opinion.
In preview of a hardware review I will do sometime in this next 12 to 18 months. I am currently playing around with the new Logitech ultra thin keyboard case for the iPad.
You scooped me on that, Ken.
I got you, man.
Is it nice?
Excellent. It is the best keyboard. I've played with a couple of keyboard cases. They've never been able to get the keyboard so that it was any better than just typing on the virtual keyboard on the iPad itself. I can do about half speed on the virtual keyboard. I can type normally 45, 50 words a minute on a real keyboard. I can usually get 20, 25 on the virtual keyboard. This keyboard, which, you know, what I have been doing is using the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, which is a very good, minimal-sized, but still, you know, what you could argue being sort of like a three-quarter, two-third-size keyboard. I can type full speed on that. This one, you know, fits the form factor of the iPad, so it's shrunk a little bit from the Apple version. But I can type, I would say, 85-90% of full speed on this small keyboard. It has excellent feel, excellent response, good key separation, good key shape, and it works really well. And I like what they've done, because basically it acts somewhat like the Smart Cover in that it has the double magnets on one side so that it will clip to the side of the iPad and then close perfectly. It always aligns itself perfectly with the iPad to close it up. And then you pop it open, and then it just has a little slot that you lay the edge of the iPad into. The magnets hook up to it, and it becomes a perfect stand.
Now it still uses the iPad's aluminum back as the back.
Correct.
The keyboard becomes the front, and it covers the screen.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are the keys similar to the low-profile Apple keyboard?
Yes. Similar to the Apple Bluetooth keyboard is what they call it. But they're probably about 90% the size of the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, just so it's shrunk that little bit more that it fits in the form factor. And you know, they shrink up a couple of the keys to smaller. I've got to get used to the size of the delete key and the size of the tab key, but overall
It's never perfect.
It's
not a full keyboard.
But I would put this at 85-90%.
But if you just want to carry your iPad and do some work on it, and you don't want to carry a laptop, it's definitely a pretty cool way to go.
Yeah, my logic on this is that it has really made it turns the iPad from being a casual email device to being an efficient email device. Yeah. Because, you know, I can get a separate stand and use the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, and then I keep the Apple Bluetooth keyboard in my carry bag, slipping other things in and out all the time, and I knock off keys because there's no protection for the Apple Bluetooth keyboard. This protects itself while it protects the iPad, and it is the stand, and it is the keyboard, and it fulfills all those functions and lets me type, you know, 40, 45 words per second responding to emails and doing other tasks.
It's battery operated like the Bluetooth keyboard?
Yes.
Yeah, it charges.
And the battery is
not removable, not changeable. It's a okay. It's an internal, so you have to charge it up via USB.
Okay.
Their advertisement said if you use it 2 hours a day, it'll give you 6 months battery life. I don't know if I believe that, but holy we'll cow. See. Yeah, they said if you type 2 hours a day, it'll give you 6 months battery life. And I'm like,
I don't. You know what? I'm not going to doubt that. I don't really. Think, my best example, and once again, I'm not. I have become very happy with a lot of Logitech products. This is the Logitech K750 solar powered keyboard for the Mac. It has an internal battery. It pulls enough power from ambient lighting, not direct sunlight.
Got it.
This keyboard will stay here in this garage that has fluorescent lights and get some indirect outdoor light. That's it. And it will basically function ongoing without any external charge, just solar. So I think the combination Bluetooth is fairly low power, and you know, it doesn't use that much power.
Is there a battery meter on it? How do you know how much juice it's got left?
There is. There's a button you can press that'll just give you a little LED light up to tell you whether or not it's still in good shape. And then there's an app that you put on the computer that can tell you more accurately. Look out, Corey, behind you. Oh, no.
Nice,
somebody took the...
we have three. I'm sure it'll be back.
Okay.
Do we lose Matt?
Ken, you know, to get back to our discussion, I was blown away today when I heard how many iPads they've sold, how many iPhones they sold. I don't consider myself to be an Apple fanboy, but I really wish I owned stock right now.
Do you think... As someone who's not completely tech geeky, I went with the Apple after I had a really bad experience with Vista and bought the MacBook, and I just got a smartphone. And the reason why I pulled the iPhone out is I knew that when I got home, I could hook it up to my MacBook or, you know, wirelessly, and it would talk and it would do everything for me, and I didn't have to, you know, set it up or make any effort whatsoever. And I think for the casual user, Macs are the way to go because you don't have to tell it to do stuff.
Yep.
Love mine.
Yep. No arguments. In fact, we just switched to an Apple Airport Extreme for our router. Because our other router, every time we turned on the microwave, we would lose Wi-Fi in the house.
Yep.
Obviously, it was a single radio, 2.4 gigahertz, single radio, and so the Airport Extreme has a dual channel, or not dual channel, two radios. It has the 2.4 and the 5. Whatever. So now I can keep working while we're getting dinner warmed up. So it's the little things that are important in life. Matt, did we lose you completely?
I'm here.
No, your video is just off. Okay.
Yeah, my video. It's just died, and I tried restarting it enough times. I just decided not to try restarting it again.
All right, good.
It's just not worth it.
Fair enough.
So. There was a title for a podcast in that little microwave thing. I missed it. It was something. It was what you said last. Is something about getting dinner and not having to worry about losing.
It's the little things like being able to keep working while you're warming up dinner. Something like that. All right. So, like Matt and everyone, what what's tough here? We have secrets right now. We have stuff that we're not yet ready to announce, and it's so frustrating not to be able to announce these things. Both on Corey's side and both on the Geek Mom side and the Geek Dad side. So, I got to be good about that. Maybe next episode we'll be able to drop a few things. I will point out for those that are interested or care, I believe tomorrow Schemer comes out of beta. Crickets. What's Schemer? We've talked about it a little bit before. And Geek Dad and Geek Mom are actually launch partners for this service. It's a Google product.
Oh, right, of course.
It's the social sharing, social want to do list sharing thing, sharing site, where basically it's not bucket lists, but it's what are things that I'm interested in doing, and here are things that I've done that I think are really cool, and you share these things, and then other people can see what you've done and go, that sounds interesting, I'm going to put that on my list. And each of the things are like location based and geotagged and time tagged, maybe weather tagged, whatever. And so that if you're ever out and about in a city or town or area that you haven't been before, and you go, you know, I wonder what there is to do around here, you go to your schemer, and it'll recommend things for you to do in the area, especially based on things that you've said you're interested in before. And so on our part, Geek Dad and Geek Mom have sort of front-loaded a whole bunch of the projects, activities, and sort of event and place reviews that we've done in the past. We've front-loaded those into Schemer, and they're available for people to connect to and find interest in. In fact, Corey, I've been told that between Geek Mom and Geek Dad, we are some of the while it's been in beta for a few months now, we have actually been some of the most popular beta partners with people connecting to our stuff.
Well, that's because we're awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally awesome.
Oh, there's one thing I can announce. The Think Geek Geek Mom contest, I believe, is going live tomorrow on Think Geek.
For Mother's Day.
For Mother's Day, yeah.
This year, Think Geek is doing a Mother's Day giveaway, big extravaganza with Geek Mom.
Lots of cool prizes.
Gotta love those guys and gals. They're awesome.
We love Think Geek. Think Geek is awesome.
They are awesome.
In fact, we are working on a new Geek Dad t-shirt with Think Geek right now, which will be a ton of fun. And Mr. Nathan Berry gets shouts out because he's doing the design work on it right now, and it looks fantastic. So that is awesome. All right. Well, we can probably start wrapping this up. If anyone's got stuff they want to plug for the near future, I can say that I will be in Washington, D.C. this upcoming weekend for the USA Science and Engineering Festival. I will be speaking on Sunday morning talking about the Geek Dad books and Geek Dad and raising geeky kids and things like that. But I know we're going to be around, hopefully around the festival a little bit Saturday, probably hanging out with Mr. Matt Blum since he's in the area. Matt Bryant, Brian invited me to go see the Science Center. Maybe you could tag along.
You mean the Goddard? Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you've probably been there 1,000 times. And
no, he took me on the tour once.
Oh, okay. So you've seen it all.
Plus, hey, Ken, I have a question for Dave before we go.
Okay.
He wrote that post.
What color is on his wall?
Open, oh, no. Yeah, what is that? No, the open letter from a parent to NHL. I know it did stir the pot, but has anything come of that? I know you had a couple interviews maybe and some guest spots that you were able to write some more on it. What happened?
Well, on Friday I was interviewed on the Michael Smirkonis show, and he's out of Philadelphia. He has a syndicated radio program that reaches 70 cities. And so he had read, I didn't realize this, but on Thursday he had read the letter in its entirety on his program. And,
wow.
And was so moved by it that they, you know, they got in contact with me, and I did about, I think it was about 12 or 15 minutes on the show. And then, you know, a lot of hate mail, a lot of people who disagreed with me, and that's okay.
Sure.
Yeah, some really interesting support too. I got an email from some guy who is up in Montreal and knows a couple of NHL owners. He's passing along to them. And there's one other thing. I don't know if we can talk about it, Ken, or not. Is the other thing the email? Is that okay to talk about?
I think we can talk about it. I don't think Bryant would have a problem with that.
Okay. We know somebody who used to be involved at the NHL headquarters, and Ken forwarded it to him, and he said that he'd read it and knew that they'd circulated the link around up there in New York City and at NHL the head office, and that they were it had some effect, and they thought that it even had some effect on
the 25-game suspension that was handed down to Rafi Torres for his hit on Marian Hossa. So it's you know, it's kind of cool. It you know, it did make a difference, I think. And a lot of people, you know, speaking out and saying that, you know, it did, you know, it spoke to him. So, you know, it feels good to do something like that.
I miss watching hockey. I loved that post. That really, I have a 5-year-old and I don't want him watching that kind of thing. You know, I'm sure when he gets older, he'll probably want to watch it, but I'm glad to know that post got out there and maybe make some more waves for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know what, it comes down to whether or not you are accepting of the fact that hockey, that basically the owners and the rule makers in hockey have accepted violence, you know, unnecessarily not game related violence as an acceptable way to attract viewers, fill seats in arenas, and are, you know, letting that sort of thing become an actual part of what otherwise is, yes, a very physical, you know, fast-moving sport. But you know what? Unless you were talking about boxing or, even MMA, there's a place for MMA. But when you're talking what is meant to be a professional sport that is not boxing, that is not MMA, then fighting is not part of that professional sport. You play the sport to win. You may play aggressively. You know, you play basketball. There's a lot of physicality in basketball. And every now and then there's a little bit of shoving. But there's
or elbows to the head.
Yeah.
Like recently.
Right. But, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I've done a lot of volunteering for the Brain Injury Association. And it's a good group, and it does a lot to help a lot of people. And so I'm keenly aware of the effect of brain trauma. And, you know, this piece touched on two things. It touched on the fighting. It touched on the needless headhunting. And I think that everyone can agree that the cheap shots are not something that should be in a part of any sport. But the fighting is something that people tend to say, oh, you know, I understand that. Or, you know, it's okay. But as Ken mentions, you know, there's a place for the MMA, and they take precautions. You're not using bare fists to hit people's head. Everyone's wearing gloves. But in hockey, the fighting is bare fists, and you end up with people that, you know, end up in really bad shape because of the sport. And I think that, you know, we kind of have to have a discussion at some point where we ask ourselves, is this where we want to be as a society? Is it okay for us to have sports heroes who end up dying at 55 because of how they've sacrificed their bodies? And I'm not okay with that.
I have the same problem watching. I'm a big football fan. And, you know, once I started doing research on the life expectancy of some of these guys, and you realize that what they're doing cuts 10, 15, maybe 20 years off their life, and then you start to feel a little sick that you're enjoying watching them cut all this time.
Football is a good parallel because there are three enforcers, the guys that get in fights in hockey games, who died last summer. And one of them was a suicide. The other two were questionable deaths, but, you know, I mean, it could be argued either way. But one of the big guys, when he died, they did an autopsy. He had this condition called CTE, and it was the same thing that Dave Duerson, the Bears safety, killed himself over. And as it turns out, there was another suicide this past weekend. I think his name was Ray Easterling. He played for the Falcons in the late 70s.
He was part of the lawsuit against the NFL.
Right. Exact same thing. He was suffering from the same condition, and it's from this repeated head trauma. And, you know, I don't know. I think at some point we really need to say, what are we doing?
Well, I know the New York Times had a whole long article about the goon who had committed suicide, the age of 14, he was brought up to start fights and what that did to him.
Derek Beauregard, and it was a three-part thing. It was fantastic. If you have the time, it's really worth reading. But yeah, I mean, there, some of these kids, you know, they grow up in hockey and they just don't have the skills to make it as, you know, a stick handler. And so they're big enough and that's their, that becomes their job. They fight. And HBO Real Sports did a piece last fall where they looked at some of these guys and to a man, they were depressed and they didn't want to fight. And, you know, they had alcohol and drug abuse problems because of it. And, you know, gosh, I just can't enjoy something like that where I know that people are, you know, destroying themselves for me to have 2.5 hours of enjoyment.
It was a good, it was a good post, Dave. Just wanted to tell you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was a very good post.
Yeah. And we'll, you know, keep following it because I have a feeling that we're not done hearing about the repercussions.
Well, I hope so. I think it's a, it's an important discussion to have.
Excellent. All right. Anything else we want to preview? Matt, Corey, anything coming up at Geek Mom? James?
Well, I got the videos from the Avengers press conferences going up tomorrow.
Today, which, you mean, when this goes on.
Today, that's true. there are some very, very minor, not really spoilers, but, you know, revelations of like maybe a few cameos, but nothing major.
Okay.
And
just mention it in your post, right?
Oh, of course I will. Yeah. And I'm also doing a thing on this new thing that TED is doing with their, they have an education initiative related to video that's launching tomorrow.
That is awesome and very exciting.
It is very cool stuff. It even allows you to like build like quizzes around any YouTube video you want to.
Nice.
Which I think is pretty awesome.
I know the Geek Mom writers were very excited because we got a new clip trailer for Brave, Pixar's Brave.
Yeah.
And that should be going up as soon as I click off and find the post and publish it.
Make sure we get Jim McCrory to check out the archery some more. So.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, guys.
Thursday before I head out to St. Louis, I'm actually getting to go to the media opening for the Legoland Discovery
To what?
Center. It's the only fourth one being opened. US. Legoland Discovery Center.
Okay, there we go. You cut out
in
for
Kansas
me.
Kansas City. So. Okay. Oh, sorry.
You cut out a second.
We thought you were teasing us, man. You cut right off when you said. That's the awesomest thing in the world. We're going to.
But I'm really fired up for that because nice. They've, you know, it's in a lot of ways like Legoland. They've replicated a lot of the city landmarks in Lego. And then they've got, they're going to have some master builders there and other fun stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Awesome.
We'll probably have another podcast before Maker Faire starts. But you know, I do want to remind listeners and that Geek Dad will have a presence at Maker Faire California again this year.
An awesome presence.
I think Matt's going to be there. Ken, me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Dave. I can't remember. No, Dave, you're not going to be there, right?
I'm going to be on my way to visit Nathan Barry.
Nice.
Oh, very cool.
Well, raise a pint with him for me.
I will. We've already made plans to meet up, so.
Fantastic. All right. Well, then I'm going to say this has been an excellent, excellent podcast, episode number 113 of The Geek Dads. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Matt, thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you, as always, for hosting.
Yep. Dave, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ken.
James, thank you very much.
Enjoyed it, Ken. Thanks.
And you know what? I've just realized that this was Corey's first time on the podcast.
Oh, and we forgot.
And the cat too.
And we have not properly grilled her as all new Geek Dads to the podcast.
Uh-oh.
Give her one question.
Okay. Well, guys didn't even recognize Agent 13 from Captain America.
Yeah, No. What it always is simply, you know, describe what your geek credentials are, and in your case, describe what your mom credentials are. So, you know, talk about your kids and stuff.
But. Oh, okay. I have four kids, 18, 16, the twins are 12. My geek credentials is that I grew up as a total comic book geek. So if you've got Avengers questions about what happened in the comics, Marvel and DC, and I actually have my very first comic book story coming out next month.
Nice.
Nice.
And an issue of, and I'll plug Greyhaven Comics. You can Google them. And it's going to be an all-women's issue of their anthology called The Gathering. But they put out an anthology a month. Really good stuff.
Congratulations, Corey.
That's awesome.
I mean, obviously, if you've been reading Geek Dad for a long time, you'll know that Corey does some of the best comic book coverage here or anywhere. No, I mean, you have always been at least 75% of our comic book coverage, and it's always awesome stuff.
You mean the comic book coverage that gets 90% of the angry comments?
You call a lot of people out on things that need to be called out on.
Absolutely. And
well, if DC Comics is listening, you know, you could actually talk to us. We would be happy to interview you.
Let me ask you this, Corey. In what comic book forum anywhere are not half the comments already, you know, slanderous, vile, and, you know, approaching Godwin's Law at an asymptotic rate?
I have to say, I moderate Gail Simone's forum on Bendis' board, and if you do that on my board, I ban you.
Yep,
so.
Yep.
You are gone. That's it. That's it.
Worst forum ever.
So now she's going to be getting a whole bunch of new accounts created just to test her.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Well, you know, we had a little fun with the definition of creep just today. So.
Interesting. Well, everyone has to go out and read that now. Nice teaser.
I hope not. I'm going to go lock the thread now.
All right, fantastic. Thank you all, and thanks to our listeners. Thanks to everybody who showed up in the chat room. Benjamin, Hayden Geek, the Gaza Prince, Joe the Stampede, so on and so forth. Thank you all, and we will have another Geek Dad Hip Tracks next week. 2 weeks to the next Geek Dads episode. Until then, thank you all for listening, and good night.
So long, everybody.
Hello. Bye. Geek Dad.